And welcome to another episode where I don't have my microphone in the right place of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor today is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they're everything John Deere, Ag, Turf, mowers, tractors. They have a great line of steel products up there, and also Honda. Honda generators, mowers. Go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
You're going to say readingtractors.com, weren't you?
No, I was not.
That was our old.
Although you can use that one and it'll still get you there.
Because I made that up years ago.
Yes,
it was
super
handy.
Yes,
I thought, man, that's easy. Tractors and reading tractors. And not to put too fine a point on the Pape Machinery promotion there, but it is that time when PG&E starts sending us out those hateful notes here in the state of California that they're going to be turning our power off. So,
yep, they're going to be thawing your turkey here anytime.
If, in fact, that's coming your direction, you might want to have a generator before you get the memo,
because
it's pretty hard to get them afterwards.
They got lots of them on hand up there. Go up
and for those
them.
Of you in the rest of the world, you know, it's yet another advertisement of why you don't move to California. So I guess it's just a promotion all the way around in kind of an odd way. Also wanted to let folks know that we are also on television, oddly enough. You know, like radio on TV. Yep. KRDT
so
channel Tuesday
23
Wednesday
point,
nights at 10 p.m. on KRDT channel 23.7 on the American Uncensored News. Is that how you do it?
Yeah, I watch it all the time.
See, we actually don't say bad things, so they can put us on the Uncensored News Network. we're not as off the rails as it seems. Show is airing live for the first time here July the 19th, 2020, but my guess is this information will not be old anytime soon, unfortunately.
What do you mean? What do you mean live?
What do you mean live?
We're going to be live?
Yeah, as opposed to, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, actually, we're talking to a doctor, and then we're talking about the virus, so I suppose that is a...
I'm going to have to get a haircut.
That is quite a distinction there. So the first hour, we're chatting with Dr. Keith Smith. We might retitle the show, but right now it's Government Interference in Our Medical Care, which I think everybody has noticed. If you go to the doctor, you'll find out that there are lots of things your physician doesn't get to do because the government won't let them. And I'm not sure most of us are happy about that. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure nobody's happy about that.
And well, no, they're not happy about it. My doctor told me over a year ago that there'll come a day when he'll just be a state doctor.
Well, and then they came after his license because he continued to prescribe medication for his patients.
Yeah, that they didn't like. So, they came after him. Yeah, so that... That's your state for you. They're only doing what's good for you.
I believe Dr. Smith is going to teach us about that. In the second hour, we have Phil Kirpin with us, who is going to share his testimony to the House Select Committee on the coronavirus. And I know you're probably sick of hearing about it, but I got to tell you, a lot of that information is stuff you haven't heard yet.
Guaranteed you haven't heard it.
And you should probably switch to decaf now.
Scary stuff.
In preparation.
Yeah.
So Dr. Smith is a board-certified anesthesiologist, go spell that twice and then say it, and co-founder of the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. He shows why eliminating barriers between patients and doctors improves health and saves lives. And, you know, I think if we all got in a little room with our doctors, we would have made that same statement. He argues that governors, federal health officials, and other key government actors should step up today to permanently acknowledge the devastating role the government interference has played in reducing access to care, stifling innovation, and preventing entrepreneurship. And he's been on all sorts of famous things, John Stossel's show, The O'Reilly Factor, The Huffington Post, CNBC, The Ron Paul Channel. So he's out there, not out there in a bad way. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. He's out there. I mean, he's...
What are you saying?
He's been around in interviews, so we're happy to have him. How's that?
Oh, he's been around. Oh, okay.
Stop introducing
people.
Yeah,
just stop it.
Hi, Dr. Smith. He's like, how frightening. I should have done my own intro. I'm pegged for all time as being out there. So I think we can start wherever you would like. We've posted your article, Doctors Must Lead Post-COVID Reforms, and I would encourage people to go and review that. It's on our site at wethepeopleradio.us, and I think it's a great article. So I don't know if you want to cover that or something else, but you just kick it off, and we'll follow along. How's that? since we're not board certified anything.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. Yeah, the article is a reaction to really my renewed optimism, seeing this COVID disaster and the government's handling of it as an opportunity. I think a lot of people's skepticism switch has been turned off, and it's on now. They're hearing the same people say completely different things just a few days apart.
Yeah, and we're not supposed to notice that.
Yeah, I mean, it's becoming increasingly difficult to know what to believe. People that have had, I would argue, a far too intense trust of experts and government officials are now, many of them, scratching their heads and thinking, what in the world is going on? And if they're lying to me about this, what else have they lied to me about? And I think there is a great awakening that is happening. I'm seeing it in the medical community as well as outside, where people are beginning to question, and appropriately so, the statements of known liars and people who just cannot decide from day to day, you know, what it is they're going to recommend or condemn. So in the article, I'm pointing out that this has been going on for a long time, and that when Washington auctions off favors to their favored cronies, in order to hamstring the underdog, you know, the upstart, you know, the newcomer, the person that's trying to mix it up and give consumers and patients more choices, when Washington auctions off those favors, it usually comes in the form of a regulation or a law that prohibits a doctor and patient from interacting the way that they normally would. One of my favorite economists out there is a fellow named Per Byland, who's associated with the Mises Institute and is a professor at Oklahoma State University. And he doesn't use the term regulations anymore. He calls them what they are, choice restrictions. And so in the article, I point out this has really been going on for a long time. And then when you see governors and others step in and ban the prescribing of hydroxychloroquine, for instance, to, you know, an agreement that a patient and their physician should have just between them, you begin to get a feel for just the tip of the iceberg, how devastating federal and state regulations have been to the doctor-patient relationship. The European studies are now all acknowledged, and there are many studies here in the United States now that show the life-saving effects of hydroxychloroquine. And you have to remember, the mainstream medical establishment condemned the use of hydroxychloroquine early on, only to pull those articles out of The Lancet and the New England Journal as fatally flawed and a peer review process that had gone awry. So there's no telling how many people have unnecessarily died because of the ban of use of hydroxychloroquine by governors in particular. And there's also, I point out in the article, it's hard to know how many people have died or whose lives have been destroyed just by the reaction of the government to this issue. So that the article, I think, it's damning in a way, but it's also, I hope, expressive of my optimism, seeing this as an opportunity for people to wake up and realize that the government and the experts that would lie to us about this would lie to us about anything. And I would encourage people to be more skeptical and not take what they're being told without a gigantic grain of salt.
Yeah, never been a better time to do your own homework, that's for sure.
Exactly. Well, that was a terrific lead-in, I guess, to everything else we'll be discussing. We need to take a really quick break. Our guest is Dr. Keith Smith. You are listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just a body. Then they go, what shall we do about them?
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Part about blowing your head apart. Sorry about that. That's where the decaf comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. Load up.
Yeah. We wind up talking about really frustrating topics, but I guess our point in doing that is because these things are brought to you in tiny little 2-minute interviews. Yeah. When you see folks on.
Yeah. Just not quite enough information.
No, on network TV or whatever. And not all of the information out there that's written. You don't know if it's good. You don't know if it's bad.
Well, I'm just excited that Dr. Smith is on because I talk to people every day that say the same thing. Mm-hmm. I don't trust them. I don't believe them. And it's that sentiment is getting stronger every day. And they wonder why people aren't doing what they say. They're lying. You know, and you don't know what's a lie and what's true anymore.
Well, okay, so Dr. Smith, I guess that's like the $64,000 question. We should probably adjust that for inflation, but I don't have a calculator with me. But I guess we've been saying that since we were all kids, so it's probably much higher now. But when people are like, okay, for me, I'm not obviously a medical person. When they first started talking about it, it was, oh my gosh, you know, we have this many cases of people who died. I mean, that was the big number. That was the every day, you know, we had to hear about that. And then all of a sudden, it just sort of magically shifted to this is how many people tested positive. And it's like, wait a minute. I don't think I care about that. I mean, that's like saying we just arrested a serial killer with brown hair. Look out for everyone with brown hair. They might be a serial killer. I mean, we wouldn't do that in any other thing. So what are like what would you consider like red flag things that just people who aren't doctors should watch for?
Well, the first red flag was the first thing that came out of their mouth because we were hearing in the United States about death rates.
Is this if their lips are moving, they're lying?
in Europe. Well, yeah, I mean, they were quoting death rates.
Right.
In Europe. And how do you know a rate without knowing the denominator? And there was no testing available. So I was scratching my head thinking, how did they know what the percentage of fatalities that will result from this virus are if they don't know how many people have it in the first place.
Right.
And remember, there was little or no testing in the beginning, and one of the reasons there was no testing was the CDC and the FDA stood in the way. The CDC had a patent on a test that was no good, and the FDA was protecting them by prohibiting anybody else from making it. When the CDC finally released their tests, a gigantic percentage of them were contaminated with COVID-19. So this is an example of what I'm talking about in the article, where without the waiving of these choice restrictions, we would still be waiting on testing. It was the free market. Ultimately, it was entrepreneurs and private individuals and innovators who provided testing so that it was available on a widespread basis.
And I think
when they first started talking about COVID in Europe, they talked about the likelihood that you would die if you got it. And you can't say that unless you know the denominator. If people look into the background of Dr. Robert Redfield, who is the head of the CDC, they will be astonished, truly shocked, that anyone believes anything that this man says. Government is that only entity whose shocking failures are rewarded with more power and money.
Right.
And the CDC is one of those organizations, and Redfield is the poster child for a just incredibly ambitious bureaucrat who has been promoted for his shocking and hysterical failures.
Well, so I think when you look at the CDC, who is supposed to be the premier outfit for knowing what's going on with this pandemic, and they don't even have a test for it, I'm not sure I can put my faith in them from the very get-go.
Well, they had a test, but it was contaminated with COVID-19. And you can either chalk that up to someone being ignorant or diabolical. I don't know which. The other thing you have to keep in mind is the CDC and many states at the CDC's recommendation have been miscounting the number of cases because they're calling new cases patients that have been treated, that have been tested multiple times, and they're calling new cases patients that have a positive antibody test, which means they have a prior exposure to COVID or one of its cousins, the common cold.
Well, then I also heard that the testing, a patient could be tested positive three or four times, and those were counted as three or four
new cases. That's right.
And what about the flu shot? We've actually been kind of hearing a little bit that if you got the flu shot over the past 10 years, there were coronavirus versions in there, and so that would cause many people to test positive.
There are many reasons people test positive who do not have any exposure to COVID-19. That is one that, you're right, has been reported. What I'm telling people is it's really hard to know what to believe. So what we ought to do, and my recommendation, is that we look at our methodology for how do we determine what is true, or at least to get rid of the chaff. The first thing I recommend is that anyone who works for or is funded by government, all of their statements should be discounted, if not discarded. Now, I will say it might turn out that what they're saying is true, but we should employ what Dr. Robert Higgs calls the precautionary principle and assume that they are lying and that they have a conflict of interest. And it may be very veiled. It may be multiple layers veiled so that you cannot determine really what their conflict is. But anyone that speaks for government or is funded by government, anything they say should be discarded. Anyone that benefits from the hysteria that's going on, all of their statements should be discounted, if not discarded. And then the people I am increasingly listening to are the people who apparently don't care about their careers or about the consequences to them for some of the things that they're saying. There were a couple of ER docs in California who finally their conscience got the best of them, and they came out and they made a YouTube video talking about their regimen with hydroxychloroquine, and it was pulled off YouTube, and they were condemned by, I believe, the California Medical Association. And these guys put their careers on the line to get that information out there. And I am hoping that this great awakening, this turning on of the skepticism switch in Americans who hate more than maybe anybody in the world to be lied to, I'm hoping that more and more people will employ this methodology and not just blindly follow the people, the so-called experts, over the cliff.
Where are you on the the whole vaccine thing? Because, I mean, I'm 58 years old, and we've never had a vaccine for the common cold. My understanding is that's also a virus, so shouldn't we have done that a long time ago if we had the capacity to do that?
Well, the vaccine should be all, they should all be looked at on an individual basis, not just individually for the vaccines, but individually as patients. That's the problem with public health. Anyone that has a master's in public health or who claims to be a public health expert does not look at us as individuals. They look at us in the aggregate. They look at us as a member of a group. And so all of our characteristics as individuals that make us unique are truly of no interest to the public health experts. So whenever you look at vaccines, You must look at them individually, and you must look at them as whether they are a benefit for an individual patient. And again, that's a conversation that should happen between a physician and a patient directly without Uncle Sam in the exam room interfering with that discussion.
And that's something that they've been involved in for a very long time. I mean, doctors anymore, it's almost impossible for them to prescribe a drug if, let's say, it was for a sleep disorder and they're going to prescribe it for weight loss. Oh, can't do that. That's not an approved, it's not on our list. So the government steps in and restricts that doctor from doing what's good for you as the patient. Because, like you said, that's not in the group, so it doesn't count. And that's wrong.
Now that's the FDA. The expert, as far as I'm concerned, on the FDA is Dr. Robert Higgs. He's an economist and a historian, and he's made a wonderful video that is that can be viewed at the Mises Institute on the FDA. And he says they make two types of errors. One error is to refuse the use of a drug for a purpose for which it might be life-altering or life-saving. And so people are denied remedies. The other mistake they make is they allow drugs onto the market that are deadly. And so the FDA makes mistakes on both sides. And it's right. An organization, I think, whose time has come and gone. And it's time to have more of a private organization like Underwriter Laboratories, whose stamp is on the bottom of every appliance. It's time to have something like that, or even multiple organizations like that who compete with each other, I think, determine whether or not drugs are safe.
Yeah, the competition or lack thereof is always a big deal. When we come back, tell people about the CDC a little bit, because I'm not sure. I think people think it's totally a government thing, but there's a little bit more to it, which would explain a lot of what they do. You are listening to We the People.
And how they get to patent something.
Yeah. And how they're funded. That's kind of, okay, well, now we're wrecking the whole next segment.
I know it. Sorry.
Stop doing that. So go ahead, try to get a word in it twice. We'll just slide that little thing, and then we can't hear you anymore. Oh, my gosh. Well, you can catch us on the American Uncensored News Network Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on Channel 23.7 on the American Uncensored News Network. And you can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Went to my family doctor for a pain inside my head. I told him the tunes you left me, I was feeling like just about dead. Well, doctor, what can you give me? And could I take one or two? Can you tell me just what it's gonna do? Will it save me from what I'm going through? Will it ease the pain? Will it ease the pain? Will it help to pacify my brain? That I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got you. Wow, I feel nice. The sugar is fine.
Can't do a doctor show without that song.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, Dr. Smith, we talked a little bit about. What
CDC.
Do they call,
he's talking about that right now.
Yeah, well, we talked about off-label prescribing, and we had mentioned the CDC, and talk to us about who is the CDC?
And how do they get to decide all this?
How do they get funded, and how do they get to write patents?
Well, I mean, again, that's the government extending favors to themselves and also to their favored cronies. But yeah, there's a significant revenue stream at the CDC. I do not know the number or the percentage of the revenue that comes in from patents that they have on vaccines and other things. One thing people need to know about the history of the CDC is that it was formed with a different name to curb the spread of malaria amongst troops who were headed for World War I, all of whom were training in the southern United States. And so the head of the CDC originally was a fellow from Johns Hopkins, and he anticipated correctly that if this new fledgling organization dispatched its charge effectively, that they would be obsolete and closed down. So he immediately began looking for ways to ensure that the organization would endure even after they completed their task. Yeah. He formed what is called the Epidemic Intelligence Service. There's an epidemiologist in Great Britain that called the EIS the medical CIA of the United States. And so the CDC basically has troops all over the United States ready to wave the flag and say, hey, we have an epidemic. And whether it's real or not, it serves to ensure that this agency, which is hopelessly corrupt, endures. People that are afraid are more likely to be supportive of their congressman or representative funding an organization like this. And so the history of the CDC's fomenting fear amongst the American people is so long. There could be a series of books written about this. One that some people might remember, during Gerald Ford's administration, there was a swine flu scare, which really never materialized, but there was a vaccine that was rushed into production, which killed and paralyzed a lot of people early on, and so it was abandoned. The CDC also was the organization that managed to scare everyone to death with AIDS. The CDC was responsible for the prediction that 20% of all heterosexuals would die of AIDS within 2 or 3 years of the announcement by the CDC that they had, and Dr. Gallo, that they had actually discovered the cause. Dr. Robert Redfield, the current head of the CDC, was the man behind that propaganda effort.
Well, wasn't so Fauci involved? Wasn't Dr. Fauci involved?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so you have two guys now who are standing at the podium. This is not their first rodeo. And it goes back to the rush to find viruses that cause cancer, some of which was successful, most of which was an abject failure. These are people who understand how their organizations are funded and what is necessary and required. If this was the first time that they've been under the lights promoting really hysterical and wrong predictions, all of which have been shown to be falsely high. If this was the first time, I would chalk it up to ignorance, but I'm really having a more and more difficult time looking at these guys. I can hardly even watch them or listen to them because they've done this before, and it's just... it's history that's not real available, but it's out there, and there's no way that the people in charge do not know the history of these two guys, and it's astonishing to me that they still have any opportunity to address people on a mass basis.
Yeah, and I was reading an article that Fauci actually held some patents on some AIDS remedies or prescriptions, and he is now involved in the patent process on some COVID medication. So you got to think that's somewhat of a conflict of interest, but nobody is saying anything about it.
Yeah, and once again, my caution, my advice, if anybody cares, is to examine their own methodology about how they determine what is true. And I believe that the reports are compelling that exactly what you just said is true. So with a conflict of interest as stark as what you just described, how can the man who is promoting A, B, and C be taken seriously?
Right.
So I really have a hard time believing anything that these people say, because they have obvious conflicts of interest. And my guess is for every obvious one, there are countless veiled conflict of interest that we'll never know about.
Yeah.
So if you're a doctor out there trying to treat their patients and they've kind of got all these roadblocks, I know I just had a surgery a couple of months ago, and the surgeon said, it's an outpatient thing, it's a gallbladder deal. He goes, if you do it as an outpatient, you've got to wait 14 days after you take your virus test and all that stuff. He goes, but if I check into the hospital this afternoon as an inpatient, I could do it while I'm on staff tomorrow. And it was like, on call. I was like, oh, that's a good idea. So I mean, doctors are having to be pretty creative in order to actually do the things that they need to do for their patients.
Yeah, and just think about how much better off the American people and the American patient would be if the physician would spend their time and their brain power not on workarounds, on how to get around the government and all of these regulations and choice restrictions, but on actually how to take care of patients and improve the way that we take care of patients. So, you know, I live in a state, Oklahoma, that is, relatively speaking, less locked down than most states, even neighboring states. And I run an outpatient surgery center, and I put all of the prices for what we do on a website in 2009. And the first patients that arrived when I did that were Canadians. Because these are people, in spite of having coverage, as everyone likes to talk about, they did not have access to the care many of them required. People have been flying to Oklahoma City to have surgery because our prices are known. They are out there. Your gallbladder surgery at my surgery center is $5,865. And there are a lot of people that have deductibles higher than that. And so they'll fly to Oklahoma and have their surgery and save money. In states like California that are much more locked down than we are seeing a surge of travelers coming to our facility to have their surgery.
Oh,
and so think of what a waste of resources that actually is. If the physicians in surrounding states would be left to their own devices to take care of patients like they think appropriate, then there would be many resources not spent on travel to my facility and others that have copied us to secure their care. But government is in the way. It's always in the way. There are many states that on a week-by-week basis have reported more suicides than COVID deaths due to these lockdowns. I'm hoping people are paying attention to that. These consequences of this sort of a lockdown mentality are real, and I would argue they are much greater with government's involvement than they would be without.
Well, when you when all this stuff first came with Obamacare, how big of a shift was that from what you were already dealing with as physicians?
Well, in my facility, we have no insurance contracts. We don't care for insurance companies, and they don't like us either. As shocking as that sounds, our prices are a tenth of what our local so-called not-for-profit hospitals charge for the same thing, and our quality is better. But insurance companies, it turns out, don't want anything to do with that. And so Obamacare was actually good for my facility, because as a gift to the insurance carriers, Obamacare allowed deductibles to skyrocket far beyond the prices that I have listed for most of the procedures on our website. So you had these people with these so-called insurance policies.
Yeah, at one point ours was $11,000.
Yeah, and the vast majority of procedures on my website are half that or less. So we have patients that have an insurance so-called benefit that they are financially better off not using. So Obamacare actually caused a surge in our business, and we still see patients that have these exchange plans that come to our facility and pay cash.
Yeah, because unfortunately that whole debate seems to keep going. The language is incorrect. You know, people talk about it's health care, but health care comes from doctors. It's health insurance, and that's really what it is a medical plan that doesn't ensure you care. As anyone with like Medi-Cal, in some cases Medicare, those things often are very restrictive and don't necessarily cover everything. We've taken another really quick break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Keith Smith. You are listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes. Was I unwise to leave them open for so long?
Medicine. Yeah. Anyway, we couldn't resist that one. So we learned, Dr. Smith, we learned during the break that apparently if you have access to YouTube, you know, you could save quite a bit doing these things at home.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a YouTube for how to take out a gallbladder, all that.
There you go.
Yeah. 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 Robert was helping us out during the break, giving us ideas. Yeah.
Hey, on a more serious note, we talked about the CDC. Yeah. We got a little bit of time left here.
Sorry.
We talked about the CDC. What about the WHO? What influence do they have on our government regulators? And transversely, do they have any influence on WHO and some of the garbage they come out with?
Chinese communists.
Well, my understanding is the Trump administration has severed all funding to the WHO.
Mm-hmm.
So that is really, that's something to celebrate.
Yes.
We can only hope that they will defund the FDA and the CDC now to make it a complete trifecta so patients can get what they need and not have foisted on them deadly things that they don't need unsuspected. But the World Health Organization has been a disaster for a long time, and kudos to the Trump administration for cutting them off.
Yeah, they obviously were pretty easily exposed as tools of the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, I don't think that was a difficult thing, although a lot of people, I think, might not have known about it right up front. But interesting that we have all these mask mandates. Do you have any opinion? Or actually, you have... opinions are bad. We have opinions, but you have medical knowledge.
Yeah. What about masks? I'm
curious. What do you bring
to
the table on medical knowledge?
A lot of mixed signals on masks.
Stupid mask thing.
Well, there are just as many studies, I think if you were counting them up and tallying them, that show masks do no good as studies that show that they do. I think the studies and information that masks do not, overall, in a broad category, do not protect people, I think those studies are better done. Having said that, whether a mask works or not for an individual, that is a completely different discussion about whether the tyranny of government should be invited to the party.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm opposed to mandates, period. I government is that organization whose ideas are so wonderful that they have to be required and mandated and enforced.
And they need the police to do it, yeah.
Yeah, and I am not a fan of mandates of any kind. If an individual feels like they should wear a mask, then they should wear a mask. There, it again, this is that, this takes us back to the methodology discussion. There is so much information out there on both sides, it is very difficult to know what to believe. The CDC and Dr. Fauci have recommended within a matter of few days diametrically opposed views on masks.
Exactly.
The New England Journal has a recently published article that decries the use of masks and actually says that it might actually make people sicker rebreathing what is trapped in a mask they'll likely reuse. So whatever people think about masks, my comment is that that is a separate discussion from inviting the tyrannical government in, whether it's city, county, state, or federal, to mandate mask use.
But it's kind of part and parcel of the same problem. If they can tell you what doctor you can go to, if they can tell you what surgery you can have, what medication you can have, and they can boss your doctor around without going to medical school themselves, then, well, I guess we can just get some bureaucrats to decide whether or not, you know, you should
wear a mask.
Slap a T-shirt on your face. And like, for people like me, I have really bad asthma. I don't move that much air on a good day. And so to put something over my face, super not happening. However, it seems like in the age of mask hysteria, if you have, I mean, I don't really think of myself as disabled, but that is a disability. It's something I can't control that is a health problem. It's okay to discriminate against people who have respiratory illness now, which is kind of interesting. You know, that's all good. We can do that. Can't discriminate against anybody else. I mean, we've got to fall on our sword to help everybody. But in this mask thing, thou shalt not, you know, go against the edict. It's very odd.
You know, Oklahoma City just passed a mask mandate this past Friday, 2 days ago. But the list of exceptions to the mandate is so long that it renders the mandate actually comical. But my favorite part of the Oklahoma City mandate, when you read through it at the end, it says, do not call 911 to report a non-mask wearer. And the reason that that's in there
is they were
doing
it.
Exactly what's happened in other states where they've mandated mask wearing. People will call the police. They'll call 911.
Yeah.
Karens.
I did.
Out there. Yeah. And you think, well, you know, how did Anne Frank get ratted out? And you're looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It is a head scratcher, and I love it that Oklahoma City actually had a plea to everyone to not call 911 if someone's not wearing a mask. It's just, it's comical if it weren't so tragic.
Well, I was getting on a plane here a few weeks ago, several times, but the first one, you know, I have my little note from my doctor, which as a person who has a disability, I shouldn't have to bring a note from my doctor, but I did because I anticipated there would be grief and problems. So I had to show that to the flight attendant, blah, 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 negotiate my way through the door. So I get done with all that rigmarole, and I'm walking down the stupid aisle, and this woman's like, where's your mask?
Oh, yeah.
I so enjoyed saying, shut up, Karen. And then my niece was like, how do you know her name was Karen? lucky guess.
Yeah,
well, it would behoove people to refresh their memory or familiarize themselves, if they're not familiar, with the Milgram experiment of what happens when someone has power, or what happens when someone is faced with the choice of disappointing an authority figure.
Yes.
And the Milgram experiment is the psychology that shocked the scientist who conducted it. He could not believe the results that he obtained. But that underscores exactly what's going on in the Karen mentality.
It's true, and they don't even know their own rules because, like in California, it's really like 2.5 pages, the thing is, their little guidance for use of face coverings. And on the back, it says the following individuals are exempt from wearing a face covering. Persons with medical condition, mental health condition, or disability that prevents wearing a face covering includes people with a condition for whom wearing a face covering could obstruct breathing. I mean, it's like, okay, that's pretty clear.
That's pretty much.
However, they won't let you in their store, and if you manage to sneak in, I've said this before on other programs, this was in that same trip, some crazy woman at CVS running through the store with her hands over her head shrieking, "She's not wearing a mask! She's not wearing a mask!" It's like,
really?
Oh boy. Apparently that Karen thought she was being chased by a lion, although I was just standing there. They've gone completely nuts. I know we only have like a couple of minutes, but I wanted to go back to that FDA thing because I can hear in the back of my mind, speaking of people with mental disorders, I can hear people saying, well, wait a minute, the FDA saves us from all sorts of things. They make sure that we get things that aren't poisonous, blah, blah, blah. So are you get rid of the FDA, replace it with something, or get rid of the FDA, like let the market take over? Or something
else. The market gave us United Laboratories, which the stamp of which is required for any appliance to enter the market.
Oh, yeah, the light bulbs and stuff.
And that is not a government organization. The FDA, you know, you're talking about the funding the CDC receives. Most people do not understand or know that the FDA receives a lot of its funding from fees paid by Big Pharma. Well, the FDA does not want to jeopardize that flow of funds, so they tend to be influenced by what Big Pharma wants and who Big Pharma does not want competing with them. So the FDA is a hopelessly corrupt organization that makes, as I said, the two mistakes that Dr. Robert Higgs has pointed out. They prevent life-saving treatments from coming onto the market, and they allow deadly drugs to come on the market. If you add it all up, then the net result is the FDA is a deadly, not a protective organization that is completely conflicted by the revenue sources that it receives.
And if you want any proof of that, just look at how many commercials you see on TV. If you've taken blah, 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 call this attorney.
Well,
those were all, remember, approved by the FDA.
Correct. Well, Dr. Smith, we have hit the end of the road here, but we would love to have you come back and tell us some more fun things at a later date.
Happy to.
We very much enjoyed it. So keep spreading the good word, and we love Oklahoma.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, next hour we're talking about coronavirus with Phil Kirpin. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.